I'd like now to introduce Chef Johnny V. He's a food writer. He's a food editor for the Santa Fe magazine. He's the author of the book Cooking with Johnny V, International Cuisine with a Modern Flair.
Uh-huh.
He runs the cooking school at Las Cosas. He's on the web at chefjohnnyv.com and so much more.
He's everywhere.
It's great to have you.
Nice to be here. Welcome back from Bali.
Ah, yes. Thank you.
Was it fabulous?
Well, I'll tell you what. I ate better there than I have eaten in years.
Really? I know.
And, you know, who knew? I had better digestion in Bali than I've had in many years. Who knew that fried noodles could do that
you? Must be all the mangoes you're eating, right?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. But you have had a life in food.
I really have. It's interesting. I actually originally wanted to go into show business. And
Were you a singer?
Yeah, when in high school I did musicals and stuff. And then went to college. Actually did some theater, but also restaurant management. But I still thought I'll still move to New York and become a an actor on Broadway. And then when I moved to New York, I suddenly realized that most of the other people that I worked in restaurants with were all actors waiting to be on Broadway. So I thought, maybe I'll stick with the career I'm educated in. And kind of started at the bottom of the feeding chain,
the food chain, if you will.
I had my little degree with me from a restaurant management school. Moved to New York, thought I was going to be running restaurants, and then immediately was sent back to the kitchen to start doing dishes. So with my little degree posted above the dish machine,
I started
at the bottom of the career. But it was fun.
Well, I think not that you want to wash dishes for your whole life, or most people don't, but, you know, then you always have empathy for the dishwashers.
Yeah, and you need to, I think people need to understand the whole system. Some of the kids that go to school, they sort of go to a school, and then they come out, and they get drawn into this management leading position, and they don't really realize how the whole restaurant runs from front to, you know, front to back.
Exactly.
So I think it was kind of a well-rounded experience. I worked in the back of the house. I worked as a manager. I worked as a chef. I worked as a waiter, bartender, and you really get a full understanding, and then you have a sympathy for everybody, and you see how it all comes together. So I think that's been a great experience. And then it's been interesting for me because of working in restaurants and managing restaurants and teaching about cooking. And then now later in my career to be writing about food and sort of even reporting on the food scene. You know, I realize that I'm sort of observing this phenomenon as well as participating in it. So it's kind of cool. This past year consulted on a restaurant here in Santa Fe called A La Mesa that opened last year, I guess in September, but just as a consultant that really hit the ground running, really took off. We found a wonderful chef from Las Cruces that we brought up and stuff. And I hadn't really worked in a restaurant for almost about 10 years. But it was interesting to sort of see how things had changed, how the Santa Fe food scene has changed. And I think you and I were talking about how we stay motivated. It's interesting because the food scene is constantly changing. So it never really gets boring because some new ingredient comes out.
New ingredients come out?
Yeah, you know, like 5 years ago, I didn't know what za'atar is, for example.
I don't know what za'atar is.
Za'atar. It's a Middle Eastern spice. It's actually a mixture of sesame seeds, thyme, sumac, edible sumac. And in the Middle East, it's used on a lot of different dishes, but it only suddenly became available over here. Have you had smoked Spanish paprika?
No.
All of a sudden, every recipe you see has smoked Spanish paprika.
So it's not like they were recently invented, but they were recently brought in as a fad or a new thing.
Yeah, like it's been in Spain, I think, for a long, long time. And then all of a sudden, you know, we have all these great tapas restaurants, for example. So James Campbell Caruso from La Boca started using smoked Spanish paprika. And then people say...
I would just like to say that La Boca is fabulous.
I love it. I love it. I'm also writing stories or chef's interviews for Local Flavor magazine. And on Thursday this week, I'm going to interview James for upcoming issues. So he's amazing. And that restaurant opened with a bang, and I still think it's right up there. I think it's
interesting. Yeah, they just changed their menu the other day.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's creative. I think he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening. So it never gets boring. Whereas the day-to-day, you know, if you have a job where every day it's the same thing, I think you become...
Yeah, I mean, if you were working in a place where the menu never changes and where you didn't invent the menu in the first place, that'd be hard.
Yeah, you're just flipping... Well, flipping burgers, I suppose, could be fun. That was one of my early jobs. It was actually a riot, you know.
I scooped ice cream cones for a period of
life. Do you remember going home with the ice cream all over your arms?
You
and
have
stuff.
Ice cream in
everywhere.
Your clothes, in
yeah,
your shoes,
and you
in
always
your
smell
hair.
Like, yeah, you smell like dairy.
I know, you smell like dairy. Even after a shower. It's very strange. But the, I mean, another thing about food is that there have been a lot of movements that intersect with ecological movements,
yeah.
Organic food, local food.
Yeah, farm to table movement and stuff. Another cool thing I got involved with this past year is I became a mentor for the Cooking with Kids program in the public schools. And this was an interesting, one of the people on the board of the Cooking with Kids program had the idea of involving professional chefs. I think it's been in the school for about 12 years in the schools here. And they go to the schools all through the year and introduce topics to the kids. Where in a lot of schools, the kids actually cooked. Like once a week, the entire school gets to do a class. So they brought in some professional chefs, and we're now, you know, giving it a little bit of a new spin and stuff. And we go and help the kids cook. And when you see these little kids getting excited about food and learning about healthy food, and it's partially funded by the American program for the schools. So nutrition and, you know, healthy diets are involved in the stuff we teach the kids. And it's really good because the kids, like, totally get into it. And they learn where food comes from, which there's
right.
a whole generation of kids that...
Yeah, they thought food came from cans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, you know, I grew up in the 50s, and food really did come from cans, you
well,
know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's fun. But it keeps me interested, you know.
Oh, so what are they teaching kids about nutrition these days? When I was growing up, there were four food groups. Then there was this rather cryptic pyramid for a while.
Which now we're realizing should be upside down. You know,
I never got that food pyramid thing.
No.
It seemed like the four food groups made more geometrically complicated.
Well, and the tricky thing was I think a lot of those food groups were funded by the Beef Council, the Dairy Council.
Right.
I don't think basically kids should drink as much milk as you and I were made to drink,
right.
You know? Milk's really hard to digest. Anyway, I think they're trying to teach kids balance. You know, it was crazy 10 years ago. There were, you know, vending machines with soft drinks in every school in the country.
I was going to say, have they gotten that out of the schools?
I think they finally are getting them out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even the, you know, the school lunch program was always pretty dicey when we were growing up, you know.
Well, I mean, I remember when Ronald Reagan announced that ketchup was a vegetable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used to have pizza every Friday and fish sticks. You know, what are fish sticks?
Well, that was the Catholic thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now it's like, I think it's all...
What
are fish sticks?
That's a non-rhetorical question.
Mystery meats, all those, you know. So it's good to see the kids. And then I'm actually right today on the second day of my kids' cooking camp at Las Cosas, where I have 9 kids that are, I guess, 7 through 12 that we do every day. We do a 2.5-hour class, so... And what you discover is if you inspire kids and also get them, if you capture their imagination, they're so into it, and they get so excited about it. I had 2 little girls that came yesterday, and they weren't sure they were going to be able to come for the whole week, and the mother came in this afternoon and said, yesterday, the girls on the way home were like, bye-bye, oh my God, and then we did this, and then we did that.
So what are you teaching them? How advanced does it get? I mean, another theme worthy of discussion is the fact that people don't seem to understand how much kids can learn. They can learn a lot of, and for me, especially having been in Bali, where you see these people who are 7-year-old expert wood carvers who got a hammer and chisel in their hands since they were toddlers.
Yeah.
I mean, kids can do a lot of things. What are you teaching them?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of parents say, so do you do like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches? And I'm like,
exactly.
Kids are so far beyond that.
Yeah.
Today we made pad thai, and we ask all the kids, what's your favorite food? They're like, we love pad thai. So I try to turn it back to the kids and find out what they like to do. They want to make sushi. And I think a lot of times
How old are these kids?
They're like 7 through 13.
Excellent.
But some of the kids, I mean, I think kids that have bad diets, a lot of times it's what our parents are feeding them, you know.
Well,
and kids are groovier than that. They want to know. They know about foreign, different types of exotic foods. I always laugh. I don't think I had sushi till I was 30, you know.
Right.
But kids that are like 10 now get sushi one night a week and stuff. So we do all adult-themed menus. Yesterday we did Mexican food. We did tortillas. We made 3 different salsas, guacamole salsa. Today we did more noodle-based dishes. So we made pasta. We made meatballs, tomato sauce, pad thai. And just like things that we know the kids will be able to go home and teach or cook in their family setting. A couple of years ago, I've been doing this also for 10 years, I had two little kids from California whose grandmother registered them for the kids camp because they were being raised by a single mom who only ever fed them from a drive-up window.
Oh, boy.
And the kids, the two little boys, they were 7 and 9, didn't know that lettuce started out as a head of lettuce.
Right.
It was always handed to them. And they also didn't really know how to sit at a table and eat. But by the end of the week, they started making that connection. They saw lettuce, even if they were eating hamburgers, they saw a hamburger started out
right.
something different, and it's transformed, and they got excited about it. It was really cool, and I thought, good, maybe it's enough to inspire them to say, you know, Mom, let's do the stuff from home.
Right.
You know, so.
And maybe they'll do a little bit
of
it for her.
And these kids, they're helpful, and they're excited, and, you know, one little kid, I asked the kids what their favorite food is and their least favorite food, and one little kid last year said he didn't like arugula. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, my mom always buys arugula. And then one day we took him to the farmer's market, and there was a big, beautiful bowl of fresh farm-picked arugula. And I gave him a spoonful, and I said, taste this. And he said, oh, my God, I guess I do like arugula.
Right.
You know? So they're interesting. Like you said, kids listen. They know what's going on. So many kids watch the Food Channel.
Right.
One woman came in today and said her granddaughter watches the Food Channel. And she's like 6 years old, and she watches it instead of watching cartoons, you know.
Right.
So the kids are getting
so
more
savvy.
So
she knows how to chop up garlic.
Yeah, and she wants to, you know, make these interesting dishes. And my parents, I grew up with a lot of our dishes started with, like, Campbell's soup, you know.
Right.
Campbell's soup casseroles. And now kids are like, they all knew what vegetable stock was today, you know. Like, you know, oh, yeah, we use that all the time. So
that's so interesting. I mean, you go into real social troughs,
yeah.
The 1950s and 60s, better living through chemistry, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, oh, the excitement of not having to guard.
Convenience, yeah.
Yeah, convenience of taking everything out of cans. And now we're on the way back up.
And now, and it's cool. And I think with the farm-to-table movement, with our beautiful farmer's market here, chefs, I think, are becoming more involved in stuff. So it's interesting to watch the journey of the restaurants in Santa Fe as well, because they've got to roll with the trends and keep things. And it's interesting for me also to interview the chefs, because I hear a little bit about what's going on in their heads and where they're taking the food scene. You know, some of them aren't on board with what's happening, and so they, I think, can fall behind with, you know, fresh food and people want healthier foods and stuff. So,
there's actually a demand for that. In other words, people know what restaurants serve fresh and farmers market food, and they choose to go there.
And they love to see chefs shopping at the farmers market. You know,
right?
Like Moo from Udu Noodles will be there,
right?
And then she's actually creating her specials based on what she found there. You know, and I do get a lot of press releases because I'm a writer from chefs that say, you know, chef so and so, you know, searches the farmer's market for the foods he's going to cook on the menu that night. And we make jokes because one of the big food companies here is called Sysco that delivers everything, you know.
Right.
And we see the Sysco truck pulling out from the restaurant, you know. Like, gee, I wonder if the chef got some of his food from the farmer's market, or is it coming from Sysco? But, you know, I think a lot of chefs locally really are focused on that, you know, dedicated to it. So
we're talking to Chef Johnny V. Now, what are your, I have to ask you this, most and least favorite foods?
Interesting. Lima beans, I think, are my least favorite for some reason.
I'm with you there.
Frozen, we probably had them frozen or canned.
I think a lot of people have, like, 1960s and 70s lima bean trauma.
Yeah, and it's like they're mealy and sort of. Although somebody said, well, have you ever had them with bacon on them? And that, you know, anything with bacon on it.
I have a bumper sticker on my refrigerator that says bacon makes everything better.
Yeah, I love that. It's so true. My favorite is actually, and it's in my cookbook, a dish called pasta puttanesca,
which is
a spicy tomato sauce with olives, capers, and anchovies. I always make jokes that I have a salt lick next to my bed. So the saltier the food, the better, you know. So
a lot of people don't like anchovies.
I know. And I think they got overused, but I always laugh because in restaurants, you know, a lot of times people say, could we get the Caesar without the anchovies? And you always tell the people, absolutely. And then the anchovies, if they're already in the dressing, you just still bring the people the salad with the anchovies.
And they don't notice it in the dressing.
It's a mental thing, you know. It's like...
Yeah, well, I think they are an acquired taste. I mean, yeah. I acquired that taste somewhere in, late childhood or
I don't think I'd pick an anchovy up probably and necessarily eat it, but I love it. And, you know, the Italians are fabulous with how they use ingredients. They use anchovies for salt. I mean, they will actually drape a pork roast with anchovies and let it roast, and the anchovies fall apart and disappear. But it leaves this
interesting,
this extra flavor. Have you heard about umami? You know, the fifth flavor. We have hot, sweet, salty, sour. And now we have umami. And I think it started in Japan, even in the 60s. So umami is a sense of flavor that is not hot, sweet, salty, sour. But it is a flavor of richness. So like soy sauce, which is also salty, also has that umami in it.
So anchovies, it translates as richness.
Richness and meatiness, even if it isn't a meat-based flavor.
Huh.
So chefs have now, you'll start to see, are trying to introduce the flavor of umami in their cooking.
But is it its own flavor, or is it apparently a quality of other flavors?
It's really a quality of other flavors, but it's given a separate... If you can identify it with your palate, it's sort of a separate kind of little oomph.
Huh.
And I've noticed, like, one of the soy sauce companies is using umami in their ads now. Find the flavor of umami, you know, in our soy sauce. So so it's interesting, and it's fun to create recipes for kids that teach them about ingredients and teach them some skills. We are letting them use real knives today, so I'm always like, oh, God, be careful with the knives. But, you know, we teach them safety in the kitchen and how to not to get burned and be careful. And,
right.
And they're great. They really, you know, I say, you know, be focused when you're using these things. And I want them to have fun because a lot of kids, I've met adults whose parents were very strict about them being in the kitchen when they were kids. And a lot of times those are picky eaters. And they're people that hate to cook because their mother or father, you know, terrorize them in the kitchen. Don't make a mess. Don't do this. Don't do that. And so I like to give kids creative license and then within parameters.
Right.
Be creative, but let's not.
Well, and the
things
that you learn when you are that age stay with you forever.
Yeah.
I didn't learn cooking as a kid at home, and I learned a little bit in home ec class, which I don't think they have anymore.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've always been able to do is make a perfect pie crust
because
the wonderful Miss Sheldon taught us that.
Yeah, and that stay with you. And, you know, nowadays it's also cool.
But I wish it were a lot of other things.
Yeah. But, you know, it's cool now that I have, like, five little boys in my class. And kids are like, you know, kids are starting to realize it's actually cool to cook. You know, boys, that it's cool to cook.
And you get girls that way.
Yeah, and you totally get girls that way. And one of the little kids, last year we divide into groups when we're cooking, and we decided that the boy team was going to make desserts. And one of the little girls said, oh, we don't want the boys to make dessert. Boys can't cook. And one of the little boys said, hey, that's sexist. He was 9. Hey, that's sexist. You know?
So, excellent.
Yeah. So we try to keep them all going. And, you know, I have it's a great week. But I don't know how people have kids. I don't know how the Waltons did it with 9 kids or whatever. And Kate and John, I don't know how they do it. You were probably gone.
You're dating yourself.
I so am. I really.
The Waltons, that was the 70s.
Really. Yeah, so it's fun. But and then also it's interesting because when I'm teaching adult classes, I see a lot of sort of leftover bad habits from, you know, the adults when they were children and stuff. And people that are timid about cooking or shy, or I try to not to make anybody feel like they can't do it.
Right.
We always want people to be successful. So we do 3 classes a week at Las Cosas, and all different topics all over the Thai. In fact, I have a class coming up on Peking duck, where we make Peking duck, where you dry the duck with a fan and stuff.
And wow.
And make 2 different types of pancakes. And we do a lot of New Mexico themed classes. We're doing a green chili class this Saturday to get people ready. Green chili's not out yet, but get people ready. So that's fun. And then being able to write about it and interviewing chefs, you know, I really feel like I've got my fingers on the pulse because I talk to so many different people. You know, about what they're doing. And so chefs between each other, not that they're competitive, but they don't necessarily share their secrets between
right.
chefs. But because if I get to interview them, you know, ideally I get to open them up and get them to
share
tell
their
me
recipes.
What they're doing. Yeah, share the recipes and tell me what makes them tick, which is these articles I'm doing in Local Flavor. We're calling it At the Table with Johnny V. And it's sort of like we go out to dinner together and I pick their brain, watch them eat, find out what they like, what makes them tick.
Right.
Rather than just where did you go to school and what was your first thing you cooked when you were a child. I want to go a little deeper than that.
I think there's a kind of creativity in every art form. And in cooking, one of the things that I so admire, and it's a gift that I don't have myself, is the ability to figure out maybe two or three or four ingredients that you don't usually put together, but that go beautifully together. It's easy, sometimes
yeah.
even fast, but it makes something that is more than
so
the sum
special.
Of its parts.
Yeah. Like, for example, you know, tomatoes and basil. There's so many things you can do with that, including just chopping it up and putting it over pasta, you know. And basil is such a fragrant dish, and herb, and you can grow it, and it's not expensive. And when tomatoes come out, I'm very lucky. I live next door to a couple that love to grow the most fabulous tomatoes. And, you know, tomatoes don't really come in until August at best. And they always leave me a couple of fabulous tomatoes on my front porch. And I work a lot, so it's not like I'm home working in my
tending
garden.
Tending the garden,
yeah.
right.
I might, people might think that I do that. But, you know, it's fun to just to take that and let that be the basis for what you're creating. You know, be inspired, but just like an artist is.
Yeah.
An artist sees a sunset or a mountain or a color.
Right.
And then they run with it. So, but the restaurant business, you know, apart from the creativity of chefs in Santa Fe, it's also a business, and
yeah.
it's a crunching business.
It's a competitive business, and
very
it's a business with not a whole lot of profit margin.
Yeah, profit margin, and your whole life is wound up in it. Incredible hours. It's tough on relationships. You know, it's brutal, and I think you've got to love it. I mean, I think if it was an industry you didn't love, I think you'd get out of it.
Do chefs tend to eat as well as their clients, as well as their customers?
I think chefs have probably the worst eating habits of anybody I know.
That's what
yeah.
I knew a chef who ate horribly, and I couldn't believe it, and I hoped that he was the exception.
Yeah, no, I think, and I have a little thought that the reasons chefs may drink too much is when you're cooking all day long and tasting things, like you're tasting sauces, you're tasting little bits of dressings and stuff. Your flavors or your appetite is being satisfied, but you haven't actually had enough calories for the day. So at the end of the night, you're still hungry, but you're not hungry for food flavors. So drinks, beer, and, you know, help you unwind and stuff. And, you know, I think a lot of chefs tend to overdo it because you're still hungry at the end of the night. Or you go home and knock off a whole pizza.
Right.
And people think, oh, he must be eating foie gras every night. And it's like, oh, no.
They don't really have a meal. Because a lot of good restaurants, they will serve their wait staff
yeah.
the meals
that they make. Yeah.
Not only because they should know what it is that they're serving to their customers,
yeah.
but also because a well-fed,
happy
wait person will stay with you and they won't steal food.
And I think chefs also always eat standing up. Even managers, when I've managed restaurants, I don't think I ate a hot meal
sitting down
for 5 years because you're always, you know, a phone call comes, there's a problem, you've got to get up and go help somebody. And so I think going out to dinner is the best thing, or the best part of this job, is because it's great when somebody else does it for you. And, you know, people say to me, oh, my God, we couldn't cook for you because you're a chef. And I'm like, you know what, when I cook all day long, if you throw me a chicken or
a Frito pie
that I didn't have to participate in, it's such a great gift, you know.
Johnny V is a chef, food writer. He's editor for the Santa Fe and magazine. He's author of the wonderful cookbook Cooking with Johnny V, International Cuisine with a Modern Flair. He runs the cooking school at Las Cosas, and his website is chefjohnnyv.com. That's C-H-E-F-J-O-H-N-N-Y-V-E-E. Yep. So the V is spelled out.
VEE.com.
Johnny, thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
It was delightful. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz features Artist of the Month Ruby Braff, Paul Smith, and Ralph Sutton.